Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast. Mr.
Sandman, you get the idea? Bring me a
dream. It's on the internet. Cutest that
I've ever seen. Go on. Give him two
lips like roses. It's a great program. And tell him
that his lonesome nights. Here's the Sandman.
Over the last 20 years, the market has returned an average of 8.25% annually, but the average investor has earned just 4% of that due to poor investment behavior. My guest today is here to discuss that with me. Dr. Daniel Crosby is a psychologist and leading behavioral finance expert who helps organizations understand the intersection of the mind and the markets. Dr. Crosby is the author of several best-selling books and hosts the podcast Standard Deviations. He's the Chief Behavioral Officer at Orion Advisor Solutions. Hello, Daniel. Good morning. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So just revisiting what I was talking about a minute ago, you know, why does the average investor see returns of less than half the average annual market return?
Well, the sad truth, David, is that we are wired exactly opposite of how we should be. I mean, all of our wiring is for, whether it's your brain or your body, you're wired for immediacy, you're wired for action, you're wired for certainty. And we operate in financial markets that are uncertain, require a long-term perspective, and we're just really not set up for it. You know, we've got these brains that haven't had an upgrade in about 200,000 years.
Yeah.
These brains are trying to operate within a market system that's about 500 years old. So in a very real respect, we were just built for a different time and place, and we're just not optimized to be patient, long-term, steady investors.
What kind of behaviors do people engage in that reinforces that sort of behavior? And what can they do to sort of unwind that, if you will?
Yeah. So there's over 200 different ways that we can get this wrong. So psychologists like myself have now identified well over 200 behavioral biases. But in my book, The Behavioral Investor, I took that universe of 200 and distilled it down into four sort of primary, what we'll call meta tendencies. And it's ego, emotion, attention, and conservatism. So ego is sort of thinking we're better at something than we actually are.
Yeah.
Being overconfident. We could talk about that. emotion is just what it sounds like. Sort of letting emotion get in the way, letting the heart get in the way of the head when it comes to investing. Attention is our tendency to confuse things with loud with things that are likely. I think, you know, my favorite kind of silly example of this is selfies and shark attacks.
Right.
You know, many more people die every year taking selfies than die of shark attacks.
Yeah.
And yet shark attacks are louder. So, you know, we're scared of swimming in the ocean, but we're not scared of taking a selfie and stumbling into traffic.
Or being on the edge of a cliff, right? I hear about those people being on the edge of a cliff.
Yeah, because one is sort of louder and more salient than the other. And then the last one is conservatism, which is just our tendency to be risk averse, loss averse, and to sort of prefer what we know. So those are the big four, but there's hundreds of smaller ones.
Got you. Okay. So just being aware of those sort of things, and is there any kind of quick list you have to kind of check off when you're looking at an investment, you know, how you would approach that? Or, you know, I know there's so much research on this, and I, you know, there was something you were nice enough to share, that piece from Canada, you know, with the 5-year relationship with the wealth manager, where we have different statistics of how people perform, you know, depending on the relationship with a financial advisor, which I would assume is kind of like a coach coaching you through some of these behaviors and pointing it out. Hey, look, you know, this is where your ego is maybe popping up or some of the other items you were talking about. And so you need to step back a little bit. I mean, let's talk a little bit about that. You know, how do you think a good manager interacts with their client to help them, you know, get out of the way of these sort of things that we're just kind of pre-wired to do?
Well, you know, the depressing thing for me as an author of books on the subject is that education is actually a very weak predictor. You know, in fact, one of the giants in the field, a guy by the name of Dr. Daniel Kahneman, won a Nobel Prize for his work into to sort of unearthing these biases. And he says, you know, he's as prone to them as the next person, and the guy discovered them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just simply knowing about them is sort of necessary, but not sufficient. So I say there's three E's right. that you need. The first one's education, right? So you need to know what you're up against. You need to be educated about how markets work, your own tendencies within those markets. The second thing you need is the right environment. This is going to be the right portfolio. A portfolio that is custom suited to your needs and your values and your goals and your risk objectives. And then the last piece you need, the last E, is encouragement. So you talked about the study that I cited in my book, out research out of Canada, the encouragement or the coach or the advisor. This research showed that people who had a short-term relationship with an advisor had about twice as much money as a control group. And those who had a long-term relationship with an advisor had 2.73 times the wealth. So basically three times as much wealth. And this is after controlling for 50 demographic variables, like, of course, income and things like that. So people who made the same amount of money as their peers, the ones who were advised had three times as much as the ones who were unadvised. And really, it comes down to that advisor kind of talking you back from the ledge three or four times over an investment lifetime is the difference, right? If your advisor helped keep you invested in March of 2020 and kept you around for the incredible rebound that ensued, you know, that advisor was worth a whole lot of money to you. So you need all three levels. You need that. You need the right education, you need the right environment or the right portfolio, and then you need the right coach or advisor to give you that encouragement.
So I'm gonna get to that, but I want to also ask you, just from the statistic, you know, the 5 year, right, versus the 15 year, and just the difference in return by sticking with a particular advisor. You know, in the industry, there's some of this jumping around where people will have advisors, so they think they're doing a good job, but then every year or two, just based on performance, they're running for the hot dot, right? What does a good advisor do, in your opinion, to dissuade a client from getting frustrated after a year or two of not doing as well as their neighbor and hanging in there? Like, what can a good advisor do to keep a client comfortable in that situation?
Yeah. So one of the chapters in my second book, The Laws of Wealth, is you need a financial advisor, but not for the reason you think. And so when most people are seeking out an advisor, they go, okay, I'm going to pick someone who can anticipate beforehand where the hot dot will be, right? I'm going to pick someone who can help put me in the highest performing asset classes. But there's interesting research I cite in that same book that shows that the average investor in the hottest fund of the 2000s, okay, so the 2000 to 2010 was known as the lost decade in the S&P. If you bought and held that entire time, you lost money. I mean, it was just a rough year for stocks. Yeah. But this one fund had 18.5% returns over that annualized, 18.5% annualized.
Yeah, so absolutely that's amazing. Incredible. Sure.
Yeah, amazing returns over this really rough period of time. But the average investor in that fund actually lost money. Because they got in and got out at all the wrong times, and they fell prey to the behavior gap that you opened the segment with. And you've seen the same thing recently in a hot fund that will remain unnamed for compliance reasons, but there's been a very hot fund now, and now the average investor has lost money in that fund. Because when it goes up, they jump in, and when it goes down, they jump out, and they make all the wrong moves. So you do need an advisor. You should stick with that advisor, but you need to hire them based on their ethics and based on their fit with you and how well they understand you, your goals, and your family, and not their performance on, you know, a 1 year or 6 month or 2 year basis.
Right. So I think that goes a long way, just to understand from the client's perspective what they're looking for and to make sure they have a good fit so the person understands how to build something for them that's going to work for them in their situation, right?
Yeah, right on.
Another question I had was, we had a statistic here about 64% of financial planning clients, these people who have advisors, feel like they have no one to talk to about their money. And this includes their advisor. So, you know, how here in 2022, with everything that's coming at us with inflation, with the Fed, with, you know, this possible outbreak in Russia, you know, how does someone position themselves to talk to their advisor if they have an advisor, or to feel better about what they're doing in this sort of environment? How would you future proof your relationship, so to speak, for 2022?
So my my PhD is actually in clinical psychology, and even though I've spent my entire career in financial services, my PhD is actually as a psychologist. And I trained to be a shrink, and I spent thousands of hours in session with clients to do so. And what was fascinating for me from that research was the number one predictor of whether or not a client got better, we know from the research, is one thing, and it's the level of rapport between that client and their therapist. And the same thing exists with a financial advisor. If you are in the 64% of folks who say they have no one to talk to about their money, and you're paying a financial advisor, get a financial advisor who is better attuned to your needs, your goals, your fears, your hopes. You know, Accenture came out with a study recently about what people are looking for in a financial advisor. The number one answer, 91%, said someone who gets me. The number two answer was someone who shares my values at 71%. And the number three answer was someone I can spend time with outside of work at 70%. People are looking for a relationship even more than they're looking for, you know, wizardry around forecasting the next rate hike or whatever. I mean, they're looking for someone they can deeply connect with and offload their worries about money. So you should be able to talk with your financial advisor about anything under the sun, because money touches every part of our lives. And so do a little due diligence and make sure you have an advisor with whom you can connect deeply.
And how do you think a client should go about doing that?
So one of the things that I encourage people to do with therapists, and I think it applies here as well, is to set 5 or 10 minute meetings. I think, you know, most advisors would say, yeah, you can have 10 minutes of my time as a, you know, as just sort of an initial consult. You can tell a ton in 10 minutes. You can tell so much in 10 minutes to see if there's a rapport there, if there's a connection, and if it's worth having a further conversation. So ask for 5 to 10 minutes of someone's time. Ask them one or two good questions about your financial life. See what the connection is, and then take it from there.
Great. Great. Now, I know you do a podcast, I understand, right?
That's right. It's called Standard Deviations.
And how would someone find you through that process?
So I have to teach my Nana how to do this every time she comes to visit. No, just about 3/4 of folks find us through the Apple Podcast app. But wherever you listen to fine podcasts, just look up Standard Deviations. We'll be right there.
Great.
Downloaded in 80 countries last week. So join the movement.
Yeah, wonderful that people could get more information, I'm sure, to help them out with these sort of things. You know, really, Daniel, really great to have you today. Really appreciate you coming on the show. And thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately.
You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.